You might be thinking, this is not how typical Therapy Insiders episodes start, if you've been a listener for a while. And you would be correct. This is the first episode of 2016, and we have some really big things planned in 2016 for Therapy Insiders and UpDoc Media. One of those is how we present our sponsors to you. And I've had a lot of feedback from listeners, and most listeners really enjoyed our sponsor ads from WebPT. But as always, we wanted to improve. So we got together, and one thing we all agreed on, listeners and the sponsors, is that we wanted the ads to really have some value. So the ads that you'll hear from WebPT and our new sponsor, PatientSights, will provide value for you. They will be insights, tips, webinars, things like that, that truly help our listeners get some value from listening to the ads, because your time is important to us. And whether that's listening to our podcast or listening to the ads, we really, really want to maximize that time. So without further ado, let's jump in to the first episode, starting with our ads from our sponsors, WebPT and PatientSights. Enjoy. Therapy Insiders is proudly sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. But aside from being the ultimate EMR for physical therapy and the rehab community, WebPT also produces incredible content in a wide variety of topics. One such content piece I was really curious about was feedback. So I asked Heidi Janenga about that. Stick around to the middle of the episode to find out what she had to say about professional feedback. Therapy Insiders is also sponsored by PatientSights, the leader in physical therapy, website, newsletter, and Facebook marketing. We talk about the importance of marketing all the time on this podcast, so stick around to the middle of the episode to hear from Scott, the president of PatientSights, on why outbound marketing is crucial for the growth of your company. And now, on to Therapy Insiders. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrad, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty excited. It might be the holiday spirit or the remnants of the holiday spirit, but I think it's mostly the start of a new year. And anytime a new year comes around, it's definitely a lot of opportunity and excitement for future growth. And you should be looking back and reflecting at how the year was, but it's an awesome opportunity to set goals. And everybody should be setting goals. If you're just kind of arbitrarily going into it with half ideas and without definitive thoughts and goals of what you want to accomplish, I think you really are doing yourself a disservice. And there's no real way to succeed unless you have something that you're striving for. And success, especially in business, is hard to come by. Running a business is incredibly hard. It's a tough, tough endeavor that takes a lot of sacrifice, and it's a roller coaster ride of up and down. And you have to be able to not get too high and not get too low. You have to understand that those ups and downs happen. And we've talked to several successful and more importantly, active business-minded individuals, because success, again, is arbitrary until you define it. And looking at somebody else's success isn't always a good barometer, but looking at somebody's activity and what they're doing and the hustle and the grind, you can pretty much see that without talking to somebody and what they're doing. So our guest today is somebody that has been hustling and grinding in a good kind of way. And I'm sure you've seen some of the work that he and his partners, who have already been on the podcast, have been doing for a few years now. And the guest is John Childs from EIM and Other Ventures. And John, you complete the trifecta, since we've already had Larry on and Tim on, Larry three times actually. Now we finally have the EIM trifecta. So welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Gene. Really appreciate it, and glad to be with you.
Likewise. So John, aside from impeccable golf styling and dress that you displayed at
the PPS conference, I think you and I have something else in common, and that is entrepreneurial drive and business excitement to actually go through it. But it's not an easy thing to do. You guys, you have a big name at this point at EIM, but it hasn't always been this big enterprise, this company, and there's still a lot to go through, right? It's not an easy thing to run a company.
No, Gene, that's absolutely correct. It's easy to look at sort of where EIM is today, and sort of think that sort of success just sort of grows on trees, so to speak, and forgetting some of the history of where you've come from, as an entrepreneur. EIM was really born out of really some of my academic experience when I was a PhD student at the University of Pittsburgh. I had the privilege of collaborating with some of the best and brightest in the profession, folks like Tony DeLito, Julie Fritz, Jay Ergang, Kelly Fitzgerald. I mean, a group of world-class researchers. I consider them, foremost mentors and friends. And, really learned how to do research, how to write grants, publishing a lot of quality research, but at the same time also living in a little bit of an ivory tower, wanting to really fulfill what I think clinical research is intended for, and that's ultimately translating that evidence into practice. And so EIM was really born out of that desire to take evidence and move it into real-time, clinical practice where you've got anything but an ivory tower. You've got regulatory hurdles, you've got compliance hurdles, you've got scheduling hurdles, you've got an environment of decreasing payment. And so it's real easy to say, you want clinicians to practice with best evidence. It's another thing to actually do that in the context of a real practice. And I really appreciated the extent to which my mentors at Pittsburgh really lived both in academics and in clinical practice. And it taught me at a really young age that ultimately to make a difference, you've got to live in the real world. And EIM was really born, out of that desire to really take the best data and make it relevant for clinicians that sit in front of patients every single day.
So having this idea is great. You come up with this idea for a company that creates actionable training and implements research into clinical practice, and it becomes actionable. So I think actionability is so unique, incredibly unique. I do a mentorship group for like a mastermind mentorship group online for some DPT students and new grads, and I tell them that if you're actionable, that you're doing more than 95% of people. So you have this idea from your training, and then you implement it, and you're launching it. How difficult was it to get EIM off the ground, and some of the stuff that you went through to get to the point where you are now?
Well, in sort of one word, I would say it's brutal. It's pure drudgery sometimes. And given the and I say that obviously in jest, it's a lot of work. EIM in its earliest days was a series of a couple of 2 to 3 different sort of continuing education courses. It was an idea looking for a partner, and we put together a few courses, sort of evidence update summaries. And that's how I actually ran into Larry Benz. Larry was a former Army physical therapist, knew him through Rob Wehner. Larry had a group of clinics in Louisville, Kentucky at the time. And they were sort of our first network partner. Larry was, sort of the physical therapy operator, if you will, looking at what we had put together and going, this has got some interesting application for, the kinds of practices that want to be the very best. He had always prided himself on being the very best. And so they were our first customer. And it was really through that initial customer client relationship that EIM as a company today was born. Some of the stuff that we worked on in terms of training their therapist, implementing sort of best evidence summaries, those sorts of things, it worked. It had an impact in their practice in a way that helped us realize there was more opportunity to do this with other practices around, you know, the country. And, you know, the idea of EIM from the very beginning was never to be a sort of classic continuing education company. One of the things that got beat in my head over and over and over when I was a PhD student was, you know, when you look at the data with respect to continuing education, it's pretty poor. And in other words, therapists that just go to a you know, 2-day course over the weekend, the notion that that dose of education actually changes clinician behavior is pretty bad. And we really wanted to, rather than do sort of really short 2-day courses, put coursework together in a longer series, certification programs, residency programs, fellowship programs, because what we know, in order to change clinician behavior, therapists really have to do more deep dive learning experiences that have the chance to then fundamentally change how a therapist actually practices. So it was ultimately taking those series of courses and streaming them together in various certification and residency programs that eventually morphed into what we know of EIM today.
So as this model takes hold and takes shape, as you grow and evolve, how do you drive, I don't want to use, you know, the hot buzzword innovation, but how do you drive continued growth and not get stale and continue to push the envelope for yourself as a company, but also for the profession, aside from longer courses and really trying to change behavior in clinicians?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And, you know, I think the way I would answer that is you have to live in the real world. I think part of what has contributed to EIM having the success that we've had is never losing the mindset of where we came from. We came from the clinic. We operate now through Confluent Health, 75 clinics around the country. So we think about these issues in terms of education and training. We think about these issues as much or more from the perspective of employers of lots of physical therapists than we do, you know, than I do as the talking head sort of CEO of EIM. In other words, I don't view myself as a vendor to our clients around the country. I view myself as their bona fide partner because we're living this out day in and day out. So the way EIM evolves is we have therapists in our clinics and from our network partners who have new potential referral sources. They've got new niche areas of practice, whether it be, you know, dry needling or whether it be pelvic health or whether it be geriatrics. And we hear our customers say, if only we could get some expertise in this area of practice, we could capture a new market share. We could change more lives. And that may sound lofty, but that's where the ideas for our programs come from. So, you know, we have a very close pulse on what clinicians are wanting, desiring, what patients are needing, and we try to respond to that in a real-time way that ultimately makes a difference, not just in the outcomes of patients, but helps to add value to the partners that we work with around the country.
Awesome. And ideas are fantastic, but ideas are a bit, I think, overvalued. And if you look at research on business and especially startup scene, ideas are the third most important thing in having a successful business, one being the timing of the idea and two being the proper team. So as the CEO of a company, and you said talking head, which I thought was pretty funny, but being a CEO, your job is to lead the company, to drive it, to create a established vision and strategy for continued growth. And so as a CEO of a growing company, John, how would you, some of the advice would you give or some of the experience that you had personally as in growth and some of the things that it takes to be a CEO and a good leader?
Yeah, well, I think number one, you have to be highly, highly, highly resilient. You've got to have some of the thickest skin that's out there. You have to deal with sleepless nights. You have to deal with the emotional sort of upswings and downswings. And I'll confess, that's one of those things that I continue to get better at year in and year out. You know, just to give you an example, if you look back at any successful company and you look back into their history, you'll invariably find some real defining moment where they almost lost it all. And through that difficulty sort of, you know, grew out a new tentacle, if you will, that contributed to their ultimate success. in the case of EIM, you know, this is, oh gosh, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, probably, you know, 80-90% of our revenues was from one company. And those revenues dried up literally on a Friday afternoon. They didn't, you know, elected not to continue forward. And all of a sudden, EIM, this company that we thought that was no longer really a viable company. We had just hired our full-time CEO. You know, I had sort of, along with Larry and others, helped persuade him to join EIM. We're this growing company, right, with all this upside, and he's been with us for less than a few months, and next thing you know, we have no revenues.
Did you blame him for it? We bring on, and all of a sudden, this is what happens. How dare you?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, then all the things you've said about just trust us, you know, you're thinking, oh my gosh, my entire reputation's on the line and it's about to go out the window. Well, it's in those moments where you really start to understand the true character of the people that you're working with. And it was from that episode that really within literally a week to 2 weeks, we had been talking about residency at this stage. We'd been talking about fellowship. We had some of the guts of the courses together, but we had not really assembled them in any sort of long-term educational track. Well, literally within a week, what used to be a six-month plan, a year-long plan, became a, we have to submit a residency application within the next 7 days, or we're going to go out of business. And you want to talk about creative juices flowing in a crisis, you know, a group of people, and it's too many names to name, I'll forget names, came together, worked their brains off for 4 or 5 days. We didn't sleep for a week. And next thing you know, we have a residency. We've got a fellowship program. I mean, we're all of a sudden a completely different company with much more sort of scalable, sort of enterprise-like offerings that all came out of what was, to, at some level, the beginning of the end for EIM. And so my point in saying all that, any company that's ever going to sort of make it is invariably going to face that crisis where you either decide that you are going to overcome or you're going to say, you know what, this is the sort of the ups and downs of this are too much for me, and I don't know that being an entrepreneur is something I'm cut out for. And, you know, I'm really proud to say I look back on that moment of our entire team as that defining moment that really catapulted us into sort of the next phase of EIM's growth.
That's awesome. And I love hearing stories like that. And I agree with you. It's almost universal to companies that are growing to have a moment like that. And sometimes it's a pivot in meaning that you have an idea and you have a plan, and that plan has to change for you to succeed. And that's called pivoting in business. And you pivot to either a parallel track or something that is in a similar niche, but not quite as you planned. And that sounds like you guys had a hell of a pivot right there.
Yeah, no, we certainly did. And of course, you know, all of those ideas that, you know, became realized in a matter of a week, you know, they were sort of on our target map. You know, they were part of this sort of longer term strategic plan. And in moments like that, you know, you throw away the strategic plan, you take everything that's on your 5-year plan and you say, this has got to be done in like 3 weeks, forget 5 years. And it's really amazing when you realize sometimes how understated your goals can be. You realize you can actually achieve far more when you're in a state of crisis, compared to when, you know, everything feels fine and, you know, you kind of get sort of lazy and you're fat, dumb, and happy, et cetera, et cetera. So those are defining moments. And you look back on those and go, wow, I'm really thankful that those events actually occurred.
And that's one of the coolest things of being an entrepreneur running a startup business is the journey that you go through. And especially if you can surround yourself with like-minded people, that journey becomes very enriching, not always fun, like you said, because there's plenty of challenges. I akin it to playing baseball. Being an entrepreneur is like playing baseball. You know, you fail 70% of the time. If you hit 300, man, you're doing a good job. Once in a while, get a home run, but have a good on base percentage and be consistent. But that you gotta deal with so much negativity and failure every day that if you don't have the mental acuity for that and preparedness for that, then it's almost impossible to succeed in that scene. But if you're ready and if you have the capacity to go through the ups and downs, there's no other experiences like it, aside from maybe getting married and having kids.
No, that's exactly right, Gene. Well stated.
before switching gears a little bit, let's take a little break and hear a few words from our sponsors. Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Aside from being the ultimate EMR, like you said in the beginning of the episode, WebPT also produces a ton of content. And one of the topics that I wanted to know about was professional feedback, because it doesn't really get talked about, but it's super important. And I asked Heidi, so Heidi, why is professional feedback important?
Well, Gene, professional feedback in particular helps us become better employees, managers, colleagues, and providers. It's mission critical when it comes to improving patient care and exceeding business objectives. So, during this month's webinar, the amazing Dr. Daphne Scott and I are going to define feedback, explore the reasons why people give and fail to give feedback, and present a model for giving and receiving feedback inside a PT practice, including actionable steps for creating a feedback-rich culture in your clinic. I hope everyone tunes in. You can register for free at webpt.com/feedback.
That's great and sounds like a no-brainer to me. So if you've never checked out a WebPT webinar, you're definitely doing yourself a disservice. So check them out at webpt.com/feedback. Therapy Insiders is also brought to you by PatientSights, the leader in website development, Facebook, and newsletter marketing. I grabbed Scott, the president of PatientSights, and asked him a quick question about outbound marketing.
Scott, right now, more than ever, businesses need an effective website as well as a marketing campaign, which is your specialty at PatientSights. One of the things I talk about quite often is the difference between outbound marketing and inbound marketing. So what is the real benefit of outbound marketing?
Well, outbound marketing has, I think, revolutionized the ability for the average business owner to keep in touch with people. So inbound, you're waiting on people to reach you. Outbound gives you the opportunity to keep your brand in front of people. And that can be done effectively through various channels of social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well, and also tools like online newsletters that you get out to people via email. And we find that clinics that engage in outbound marketing, as long as you're not talking only about yourself and making it sound like a brochure, you've got an opportunity to educate people, to inspire them by talking about stories of people that have overcome adversity and rehabilitation. Outbound marketing just really gives you the opportunity in a variety of ways to keep your name in front of people where they happen to be.
I very much agree. For more information on outbound marketing, check out patientsites.com/insiders for a free ebook, as well as 50% off for 3 months for patient site services. And now back to the show with John Childs.
Aside from the business stuff, you guys are doing some really cool clinical stuff as well. I know a while back we talked to Larry about the new DPT program that you started, which is not that new anymore. It's a 2-year program. How's that going?
You know, we've had a fantastic sort of experience so far. Just to kind of, you know, back up a bit. You know, over the last 10 years, we've had the privilege of working with some of the, you know, the best practices around the country, developed a lot of very deep clinical networks that have really invested heavily in training with EIM, residency programs, fellowship programs, you know, companies like Athletico, Benchmark, Texas Physical Therapy Specialists, Pro Rehab. I mean, a lot of the real movers and shakers. And without which EIM wouldn't be. And because of that, we had a network of clinical providers that are, working with us on the post-professional side. At the same time, they're taking students from entry-level programs, realizing what we thought to be true is that, clinical education and entry-level physical therapy is in our, humble opinion, it's broken. You know, when we shifted to the DPT now 10 years ago, academic physical therapy programs invested a lot of energy in upgrading their didactic curricula. We added pharmacology, radiology, medical screening to sort of accommodate this new sort of doctoral degree. And I think by and large, we did that made that transition on the didactic side. We made it very, very well. I think by and large, the academic curriculum in most DPT programs are very solid. Clinical education has not really been touched or bothered for the last 50 years. We still do it in sort of the same old-fashioned way where one student goes to one clinical instructor. And if your clinical instructor is really high quality, you can have a fantastic experience, but oftentimes maybe it's not. And no one individual, no one clinical instructor sort of owns all the knowledge that a student needs to learn anyways. And so we find that clinical education is really disconnected from academic programs. In a lot of cases, and I'll speak with my academic educator hat on, and perhaps this is overstated, and it certainly irritates some folks in academics when I say this, but we send students out to the clinic, and our strategy is sort of one of hope and prayer, where we hope and pray that our students will catch the knowledge that they need while they're out on clinicals, but without any real sophisticated enterprise way to understand whether that's really happening. There's a lot of variability in clinical education. So my point in saying all that is having this network of clinical partners around the country, they were asking us to get involved in entry-level education. Help, the message was help us innovate in entry-level education, just like you've helped us innovate in post-professional education. More and more of their therapists were now residency trained, fellowship trained. So there's quality mentors now that can provide, more sophisticated, enterprise-like, predictable, consistent clinical education. In other words, let's bring curriculum to clinical education just like we do for the didactic phase. In the didactic phase, students show up, they have a syllabus, they know what they're supposed to read, there's a lecture, there's some testing involved, and it's very sort of predictable. In clinical education, for the most part, with few exceptions, students show up in the clinic and they sort of see whatever patients are there, and there's no real syllabi, there's no real curriculum. It's just sort of a, call it on-the-job training. And so, we responded. We started working with a number of entry-level programs that were interested in shifting to longer-term clinical education. Rocky Mountain, for example, was one of the first schools we started working with. The Army Baylor DPT program in San Antonio, and other programs that said, hey, we agree, we want to help be a part of the next generation of clinical education. And so because of our clinical network around the country, we had very motivated partners that wanted to participate with us in that process. At the same time, we had developed some expertise in blended learning and how to do sort of coursework online, on-site. Technology has obviously evolved to the point where you can do extremely high-quality learning in both synchronous and asynchronous formats online. And ultimately, it was those combinations. It was a sort of experience with blended learning in the post-professional side, as well as having some very deep, we've been very blessed to have these deep relationships with clinical partners around the country that we've been able now to leverage, if you will, into entry-level education. And that's where the relationship with South College was formed. We started 66 or so students in July, end of June, and I think we've only lost maybe one student since then. It's been very sort of fun to see this model come to life. Tim Flynn was actually, you mentioned Tim earlier, was just down in Knoxville. He's full-time at South College teaching the musculoskeletal intensive block. Students come from all four corners. They don't actually have to live in the local area. We have students all the way from, Washington State to San Diego to Maine down to Miami. And so when they're in their home base, they're, in virtual classrooms online. I hesitate to almost use the word online because it conjures up these ideas of students passively, sitting in their underwear, consuming, and watching videos. And, our students are in virtual live classrooms 3 to 4 days a week. They're interacting with faculty every single day and using technology in extremely cool ways to enhance learning. And then when they're on site, they're spending, full and long days in lab. So when they're on campus for those, 2 week at a time intensives, it's all hands on. And it's funny when you describe this model, Gene, some folks say, wow, students are in lab for 8-9 hours a day. Aren't you going to exhaust them? In most programs, you sort of shift back and forth, lecture, lab, lecture, lab. And of course, we remind them that that's exactly what students are doing when they're in the clinic. So in many ways, we feel like we're preparing our students for real world clinical practice where they're on their feet all day, all day long, doing lots of hands on, sort of skills with patients. So that's a little bit about the model. It's been fun.
Yeah, it sounds like an awesome growing model. And first of all, I think you just lost a lot of people by telling them they can't partake in the courses without just wearing underwear. So not a good business move, John, not a good business move. I think, me personally, I would have taken 8 hours in lab over sitting in lecture any day. I loved the lab. I loved the hands-on stuff. And it was very monotonous at times just to sit through hours of lecture when we got the PowerPoints. And some of the information is definitely, it's good to hear from somebody. But a lot of the stuff, somebody's just talking at you. It's not interactive. And if you have a question, very, very few times there's a back and forth in terms of stuff that you don't know. So I think I agree with you moving forward. There needs to be that hybrid model of interactivity and technology is definitely catching up to that. So moving forward, John, what are you excited for in 2016, whether it's more programs opening up potentially? What do you foresee as some of the cool stuff happening for you at EIM and for the profession overall?
Well, we continue on the EIM side to take a very sort of ecumenical sort of approach. We want to work with more DPT programs around the country who are interested in evolving the model, really pushing the sort of envelope of what's next. I mean, we fundamentally think that DPT education has gotten too long, too expensive, too bloated. I don't think of any ill part of anyone sort of in academics. There's been, where there's supply and demand and willingness to pay, higher ed is always going to accommodate a student's willingness to pay more and more tuition. Higher ed will find a way to shift the DPT to 4 years and 5 years if students are willing to, pay. We just think that we're at the end of that cycle. We think that the need for students to get more bang for their buck, so to speak, is very real. We think that given technology, given the ability to build a blended model program, that students can have world-class DPT education in closer to a two-year model than a three-year model, and that it's not a sacrifice at all in terms of quality. In fact, we would argue just the opposite, that we truly can add value by helping lowering costs while improving outcomes over time. So, I think the proof's in the pudding, right? That's the part of doing anything that's new and different. And we certainly, respect our critics. I mean, criticism of the efforts that we've been doing has really informed and helped make us better. And I think that's in part, when I talk about the need to have thick skin, you've got to be willing to listen to critics. As hard as it is sometimes, there's wisdom there often that if you just listen and use that to incorporate, you can make yourself better. And I think we've done a pretty decent job of that, of listening to our critics, respecting the fact that not everyone sort of sees this as the future, and learning as we go and continue to evolve the model.
Well, constructive criticism is always a good opportunity to get into somebody's head that sees it from a different perspective. And we talked to Larry about this on his previous podcast about making sure that it is constructive criticism and not just personal attacks. And I think when a statement starts off, I think this, then that there's not a lot of validity behind that statement. It's unless it's I think because of this, unless you support it with something. Personal thoughts, opinions, I don't want to discourage them or discredit them completely, but there has to be some gravitas behind a thought. And just personal opinions, they're just that, personal opinions. Constructive criticism needs to, I think, have some kind of support, which is pretty much the foundation of your entire company, support through some kind of evidence. And it's all about the data. I think 2016 and moving forward, and especially in physical therapy, is all about the data. And the more data we can get on patient care and running businesses, I think the better we will be in the future. And we are still in infancy. And Mike Reinold talked about this on the previous podcast. what we're doing now is probably nowhere near what we'll be doing in 10, 15 years, that we're still figuring stuff out. And as much as we are on evidence-based medicine, I think there needs to be a big shift to evidence-based business. And a lot of the data that we have, a lot of the research that we have, I think is incredibly underutilized, such as business, such as psychology, such as behavioral sciences. And once we start implementing that, and I know that EIM has a business program and classes as well, I think the more we implement that, the more successful we'll be overall.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Gene, you know, I think at some level we've almost, the pendulum has shifted too far, you know, and at some level perhaps we're guilty of contributing to this pendulum on the EIM side, where evidence-based practice became defined as, you know, fancy hands-on skills that are sort of black and white, consistent with data, you know, forgetting the fact that, you know, there's lots of soft skills. You mentioned psychology, mindfulness, empathy, caring, compassion. And, you know, therapists that have all of these intangibles, even if they're lacking a bit in the technical skills, invariably, you know, when it comes to wanting to hire a therapist, you know, we'll hire a therapist with really good soft skills and maybe average technical skills any day of the week, because the best technical therapist in the world that can't communicate with patients invariably has, you know, bad outcomes. And so, you know, I think, you know, ultimately we've got to look at evidence as not just, you know, the hands-on sort of psychomotor skills. You know, the days of studying, for example, treatment A versus treatment B, and, you know, celebrating, you know, microscopic improvements in Oswestry scores, I mean, that's okay. But we really have to get to the more fundamental issues of, you know, what's broken in healthcare is the process of care. It's getting patients to the right place at the right time. And using the massive amounts of data we have now, clinical data that's very solid, to advocate for our profession as being what I think is the real secret sauce of healthcare reform. I mean, I say this and I'll say it again, physical therapy is the best kept secret in healthcare. And we know that when patients get to us sooner rather than later, even sometimes despite what might be viewed as lower quality care, good things happen. We are educators, we're motivators, we're coaches, we're mentors, and we help patients recover. We help them avoid consuming higher costs, injections, drugs, surgery. So, you know, I think we've got to almost back up into the 30,000 foot view, get out of the minutiae of technique A versus B, and really start to see our profession for what it can be in the context of really broader healthcare reform.
Couldn't agree more. I think that initial barrier is what we need to do is create a relationship as quickly as possible with the person. They need to buy into what we're telling them. And to do that, you have to sell, you know, to kind of reference back our talk with Daniel Pink. You know, I told him that physical therapists are the best, worst sellers in all of medicine, that we're selling all the time. And then anytime we're called out on it, we say, no, we don't sell. We tell people all the time, in encouraging and very, very persuasive ways, how to exercise when they're in pain, how to do things that normal people would never want to do. It's like, oh, your knee hurts. Okay, let's go walk on it. Oh, your knee hurts. Let's go exercise on it. You walk up to any stranger on the street and say, oh, does your knee hurt? They say, yeah, let me show you some exercises. Most of them will like, no, it hurts. I don't want to exercise. But I think we are capable of getting people to buy in, to show them that if you do this, you will get better, and having them believe that and then do it and supplement that with actual results. And I think, like you said, the soft skills, the therapist that can do that, explain that incredibly well and build that relationship quickly, are the ones that are going to be successful with outcomes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, again, very cool stuff coming up. It's always fun to kind of keep track of EIM and you guys, and always fun to chat with you. And if our listeners want to reach out, if they want to know more about any of the programs you're doing, any of the continuing ed, or just kind of pick your brain about something or another, I know you're busy, but where can they reach you? Where can they find you? Social media, anything like that?
Yeah, you bet. So social media, my handle is usually ChildsJD. So just my last name, ChildsJD. That's Twitter, Facebook, Skype, those sorts of things. My email, John, John@EIM.com. mpt.com. And heck, while we're at it, it's my cell phone, 210-364-7410. I tell people, if you want to contact me and you don't write this down or whatever, just Google it. It's all there. And I think that gets to the heart of, you know, what makes EIM what it is. It's a community. It's people that are willing to listen, to collaborate, to be available. There's nothing more that I probably enjoy doing. Some of my close peers know this. I'm like a librarian in another life. Random students I've never met will reach out to me because they've heard that, you know, I have pretty good ability to, you know, access a research article and those sorts of things. And so it's, you know, my point in saying that is it's the willingness to collaborate, to do the small things, to be there for anyone and everyone, to really care about the future. That's, you know, ultimately, to your point at the beginning of the podcast, you know, what makes what defines success? I mean, I can tell you for us at, you know, Confluent Health, and certainly for EIM as a company, what defines success is really being able to walk away from the profession one day and having some level of satisfaction that we left it in a better place than we found it. It's really as simple as that. I mean, I can assure you that chasing after the next dollar and those kinds of things is not where the value lies. You work way too hard for some sort of, you know, monetary sort of incremental reward. I mean, at some point, it's really about making a difference. And that's at least what wakes us up every day and you know, causes us to keep going on despite obstacles, to keep innovating and really trying to make a difference. That's at the end of the day what it's all about.
I agree. I think not to devalue the fact that when you run a business, you still want to make money. You need to make money. Yep. But I think once you do that, that's when the fun really starts. That's when you can really get creative and have fun and focus on innovation and focus on giving back. And really, really, once you're secure with the financial, with the cash flow and the input that you have, it's then you can really do some really cool stuff. And the journey definitely switches a little bit.
Yeah, you know, to it said differently, the financial success is a byproduct. It is not an end in and of itself. It is a byproduct.
Absolutely.
And folks aren't in business. You know, we're not running nonprofits and those sorts of things. But it's not your primary motivator. And when you keep your eye on the real mission of why you originally sort of started down this road to begin with, invariably success in multiple ways and multiple definitions tends to follow.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. And it's always something you strive for, but it's in parallel with everything else that you're doing. So always keep track of that. So John, thanks so much for joining. I can definitely attest to all the listeners that the conversations that we have on air are very similar to the conversations that we have off air, whether it's at a conference or before we record. So I always learn something new from you, Larry, Tim, everybody at EIM, always a great group. And I really, really advise our listeners to reach out to John, especially for whatever reason he's given out his cell phone. It's got to be a bad phone, right? Like a special, the phone vibrates.
No,
like,
I actually answer my cell phone, text me. I encourage people, you know, blow it up. Let's let's talk.
There you go. You got the man's cell phone, for God's sake. So give him a call, shoot him a text, and go learn something. I guarantee you the conversation, even if it's a two-minute conversation, you will come off of that two-minute conversation learning something or knowing something more than you did before you started. So, John, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, you bet, Gene. And if I can just sort of close it on one thing.
Absolutely.
You know, the reason I'm so open with my contact information, I mean, if I get asked this once, I get asked this a million times. I know Larry does, Tim does, all of anyone that has some level of success, it's sort of how'd you get there? And I don't want to make any bones about how I got here. I got here by associating myself with some of the very best and brightest, putting myself up underneath their leadership and mentorship, whether it be Tony DeLito from an academic perspective, whether it be Larry from a business perspective, and really being willing to learn. And so my point in sort of opening up my sort of, you know, contact info is, you know, there's that next generation of young therapists that are looking for that mentor. It may be me, it may be somebody else, but attach yourself to them, add value to their lives. They'll pour into you many times over, that'll serve you well, and it's good for our profession. So I say that with all sincerity. I really enjoy interacting with young, bright, motivated therapists that want to be a part of the next generation of making a difference.
Out of everything that we talked about, I couldn't agree with that more than anything else. It's when you get around those people, it's a whole different energy. And I never understood what energy meant until I was in groups like that, when you can just, the excitement from hearing your thoughts come out of somebody else's mouth, until you experience that in large groups, there's nothing like it. It's very cool to see that there's like-minded people that think the way you do, and then passing that forward and encouraging others coming up, because it's very easy to get discouraged in the business world and in this world, especially with a lot of naysayers. And just, you know, the truth is there's a lot of negative people, and you got to stay away from those people and gravitate towards the positive. So you have a cell phone of one of the most positive, so use it.
Appreciate it, Gene. And thanks for the opportunity to be on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, John. Love to have you back. You got to at least match up to Larry. He's been on three times, so you can't have him being the one that's been on the most.
That's all right. You got to get me scheduled. I'll be back.
Done. Done deal. All right. So thanks a lot to John. Definitely check him out. Check out EIM and everything they're doing. And Manipalooza is coming up, so if you haven't registered for that yet, definitely check that out. I know it's always a good time. My buddy Jeff Moore is going to be there, and you're going to learn some cool stuff. And as always, check out updocmedia.com and Therapy Insiders on iTunes. We've been consistently in the top 20 of the medical podcast on iTunes, which is mind-blowing in itself, considering everything and how many podcasts there are. And that's thanks to you. Thanks to all the listeners and all the reviews, and even more so the awesome emails that we get, the messages on Twitter, the private messages that nobody sees. Like John said, there's nothing cooler than that, the interaction. It's all about the interaction. If it was just us putting out podcasts and you guys are never communicating and reaching back out to us, we'd probably stop doing it. So thanks a lot for really communicating with us and going back and forth. And we want that to continue in the new year. So 2016 is right in front of us, and we look forward to bigger things from everyone, and looking out to reaching out even more. So have a good new year, and we'll talk to you soon.